Hello and welcome to another episode of Henny and Hallie Can't Quit Golf. I'm Henny Koyak.
Hello, sorry. I thought you were going to say my name.
I mean, is it psycho or is it just great planning?
I'm like, why are we out here? Because they love the game.
No.
I do not want to hit a little white golf all around.
Thank you for joining us again. We've had an incredible, overwhelming response to episode one and the launch. I guess people wanted to hear from Hallie and I just tacked along for the ride.
I guess, Henny. I mean, my confidence is at an all-time high right now, so I'm feeling good.
Obviously, in episode one, we started off with a bang with Brooks and Jenna, and possibly the only way that we could have equaled or topped them is by going for Mr. Butch Harmon, obviously a legend of the game. The whole family is legendary to the game. But I worked at Sky with Butch, had the pleasure of working alongside him and getting to know him. And I really feel like one of the most underrated attributes that Butch has as a coach, as well as obviously he's got this incredible knowledge of golf, right? But he gives you so much confidence. As a golfer, as a person, he's one of those people that you just have a 2-minute chat with him and you come away and you're like, oh, I feel better now. So I'm so excited for you guys to listen to this and get to know him a little bit better. Those of you who have watched Sky know his penchant for matching his Sharpie up with his shirt color and have seen him probably dressed as Elvis and all of his ridiculousness. But maybe if you haven't seen that or you just want to know more about him, this is the episode for you. Hallie, how well do you know Butch? Because obviously your dad being Davey L, have you really like spent much time with him?
No, honestly. Yeah, this podcast interview was my first time ever meeting Butch Harmon. So it was, I really enjoyed it. I mean, I know Claude Harmon, his son, quite well. And we have a funny rapport always, but it was really cool to talk to him. And I know, like you said, Henny, you've had a great relationship with Butch and have worked with him for a little while. I have a question for you though. In terms of coaching, when did you have your first ever golf coach?
Oh man, I started playing golf at 9. I was in the Team Baldo when I was 12. And I think my first coach was somewhere in between that. Actually, no. Okay, now I'm thinking back. My first ever golf coach is called Richard Antrobus, and he taught out of Yeovil Golf Club, and I think I was 9 years old and we used to go on the 9-hole golf course there. I have such great memories of Richard. Like, he just made stuff so fun. I really enjoyed going to all my lessons with him. I know it's a podcast so you can't see, but I just have the biggest grin on my face like talking about him, remembering him. So my first couple of coaches were more sort of making golf fun initially, and then kind of guiding my swing along and giving me little fun drills and stuff to work on. But my first coach was Jeremy Bennett out of Windlesham, and he was my coach for a long time. He was the Team Faldo coach, so that's how I met him, and he coached a lot of the players in Team Faldo and had a lot of, you know, ideas on fitness, and that's sort of the modern golf coach, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Not that you are a fitness coach and golf swing coach and nutritionist and all sorts, but you have that basic knowledge and understanding of, hey, I think I'll go introduce you to this fitness person or this physio or this nutritionist because I think that'll benefit you. And he was the first person that really helped me with that and helped me build a team. A great coach for me is keeping things in perspective, keeping things simple, and almost being like that sounding board and knowing the player so well that when a player comes in, and especially with me, I was a tinkerer. So you came in and I'm like, hey, I was on the range. I got this thing. I think I want to do this with my swing, or I want to transform it to look like this, 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 and this. And being like, all right, maybe let's just work on this for now. Like kind of taking you back and talking you down from whatever I've got it pedestal that you're now on. And just keeping you consistent, keeping things simple. And as I said with Butch, like ultimately giving you a massive injection of confidence so that you know, hey, like actually it's not so bad. I may have looked on the camera and saw that my club face was like a fraction more shut than I thought it was, but actually I can still go out and play good golf with that.
Right. Which is so important. Because I mean, obviously our podcast is Henny and Hallie can't quit golf. And I mean, the amount of time. So like for me, I really only had like one coach my whole life, which would be my dad. But yeah. I did have one coach in high school. Because I was going through my angsty teenage years and I didn't want to work with my dad. Okay. No, I was like, dad, get away. But I'll touch on that in a minute, but I will say there are times like throughout my playing career where I just felt so lost, you know, where yeah. I was at that moment where I'm like, screw this. I do not want to be out here. And, you know, sometimes just being able to, at the, even though my coach was, you know, my dad, being able to just be like, all right, you have it in you, you know, good golf is inside of you. So let's go back to the basics. It's funny how most of the times the problems are nothing new, you know, like yeah. for me, like I'd be like, I don't, hooking it off the face of the planet and I can't do it. And my dad's like, send me your swing, send him my swing. And he would literally just spit out the same exact thing that he had told me for the last 5-6 years, you know, like you're whipping it inside, you're lifting it up, the club's dropping beneath you, you're flipping it over. I was like, huh, you know, but just sort of like calming you down when things do feel like you're completely going off the rails. I think yeah. being able to be like, relax, it's totally fine. We're going to get you back on track here. And I feel like that, like my dad, Butch, you know, Phil Kenyon, just being able to keep it simple, especially when things are, you know, are not going well, because you just start reaching for things, you know, you're like, let me try this. And it's just like, then all of a sudden you're even more lost than when you first started. So
yeah.
I think that's like, for me, I think that's what really good coaches are good at, is, you know, keeping it really simple, especially when things are, you know, maybe not quite right. Like, how do we get back to, you know, being on the right track?
100%. It's personalities, right, as well, isn't it? Because some person, you have two people that say the exact same thing to you, but they could say it in very different ways. And one can set you off and the other can make you be like, oh yeah, that's such a good point.
Oh yeah. So, I mean, I'm just saying, like, there's a coach I remember when junior golf that I worked with, like I went to a junior clinic and all the kids loved this coach, but I was like, I don't understand what you're saying, yeah. you know? And I was yeah. like, it's clearly like, sometimes just different coaches work for different people, or, right. you know, sometimes players need like the amount of players that like have gone from my dad to go see Butch or gone from Butch to go see my dad. Like sometimes you just need yeah. it said in a different way and they're saying the literal exact same thing,
yeah.
but just slightly in a different way.
You know what I love about modern day coaching as opposed to how I felt it was a bit more commonly done when I was an amateur junior golfer. I think back then it was very much, you have to swing it like Tiger, or you have to swing it like this. So everybody's trying to fit this mold. And nowadays I feel like coaching has gone more, which I'm a big believer in, hey, look, your body works this way, right? Like John Rahm, he was born with a club foot and his really short backswing is because of that. Mm-hmm. So you're not going to try and change that. And you see like the Matt Wolfs, you see the DJs, you know, when DJ first came out and was doing incredible things, there was how many people on the range trying to get a bowed left wrist. But that's mm-hmm. just how his body works. And you don't want right. to change that. One of my biggest bugbears is hearing coaches on ranges in the past with an 8-year-old and they're saying, do this, do this, do this, do this, and being really technical. It has to be fun and simple to begin with, right? If any coach is going to the nth degree with your 8-year-old, no. Like if you want your child to be in the game for a really long time and have longevity with it and enjoy it and love it, it has to be fun and it's got to be kept simple. Even if they're not doing things technically perfect, as you see from a lot of the players that are out there right now, it does not matter. Just keep it fun. Keep it simple. But ultimately at this point, teenage years, you've got to be spending time out on the golf course. If you're spending hours, or a coach is telling you to spend hours grinding on a range, that's not it. A lot of things that I hear from guys out here, like JT, for example, is just learn how to hit it far and fast and then figure the rest out later. That's kind of what the guys are saying out until now. If it's like, oh, what would you wish you'd done maybe slightly differently to some of the older guys? It's very similar things. So again, through teenage years, it's got to be fun. Try and hit it as hard as you can, as fast as you can, and still be you, still finding your body, still changing so much, right, through your teenage years. You're still growing. You're still figuring out your coordination. So again, don't be bogged down. Even when I was younger, I'd see some players that, like, really good amateur players that were there with like notepads and notebooks and a whole team surrounding them as teenagers. You don't need that. You just need to still learn how to score, learn how to play golf your way. And then as you get into professional golf, then you want someone almost more as like a mentor to guide you along, who's been there, seen it, done it. Maybe this is just my opinion. You might have something different, Hallie.
I actually learned this from one of my colleagues, Sam Weinman. Hello, if you're listening. He said, I don't know if he said he did this with his kids or his friends did it with their kids. I think he said he did it with his kids, but he would take, let's just say for argument's sake, he did it with his kids. He took them out on the golf course. And as soon as they would like have a good hole or like make a putt or do something, he was like, okay guys, time to go in, time to go for dinner. So as soon as they ended on a really positive note, it's not like his kids would be like, please, we're hot, we're hungry, let us go inside. Like, right. He was always made sure that they ended on a positive experience and left them wanting more, which I was like, that is so smart. So definitely keep that in mind, guys, when you're, you know, picking coaches for your kids. But we have an interview here with one of the, or if not the best coach of all time, Butch Harmon. So enjoy.
Hi, Butchie, my love. I've missed you.
How are you? My gosh, I haven't seen you in forever. Congrats on baby, on getting
Thank
married,
you.
Everything.
So you guys Thank know you. Each other, right?
Oh yeah, for quite a
yes.
while. Yes.
Butch is my honey badger mentor at Sky.
Honey badger mentor.
Honey badger, that's what I was.
Butch's nickname is the honey badger because he's just so fierce and confident and just instills that confidence in you. You know, honey badgers, I can't swear on this, but they don't give it.
Have this huge trailer that Sky has that we do commentary from. And then we have this gallery area where we all sit. And that's where we have the most fun.
100%. That is where all the chats happen.
That's where you
no
hear
one
the
can
real
hear.
BS.
During the down.
Yeah. The real BS. This is the commentators are in the other room commentating. We're watching the broadcast, but we're commentating ourselves, but it's not the one that's going out.
No, it's a separate feed that no one can listen to, unbroadcastable nonsense.
I would 100% pay for Butch and Henny commentating golf, just giving it to you the real stuff. I'd love that.
Absolutely. Honey badger commentary.
So you did commentary with Henny, obviously, you know, an incredible golf instructor, maybe number one in the world, maybe number two in my heart, Butch. Very
That's
sorry.
All right. That's okay. I would hope you would say that.
Oh yeah. I'll get disowned. But I mean, you come from such an incredible, incredible golf background. You have players and incredible players, incredible instructors. Your son is an instructor. I mean, I talked to Claude a lot, and it's funny because I was like, I don't know how you did. I was never going to be a golf instructor, but my brothers became golf instructors. Yeah. What was it like growing up? I know you played on tour, but was golf just always the path for you?
You know, everybody thinks because myself and my three younger brothers, we've all been very successful as golf instructors, that our dad pushed us into it, which is the complete opposite. When we were younger, we were all good junior golfers, good amateur golfers. If we wanted to play, fine. If we didn't want to play, I played every other sport. So every season I was playing a different sport, and I only play golf in the summertime. And, you know, I always loved golf. The funny thing about teaching, people say, how did you get into teaching? I said, well, you know, I was around it my whole life. My dad's probably one of the greatest teachers of all time and great player, Masters champion. I was around the best players in the world my whole life. So I always saw my dad and them together and listened to them teach. So when I was a kid, with all us junior golfers getting together, I'm trying to help them. I don't know what the hell I'm saying, but I heard somebody say, hey, why don't you try this? You know, I heard my dad and Ben Hogan talking the other day, and they were doing this. Why don't you try that? So I kind of always liked getting involved in that. And my deal was, I played the tour 69, 70, 71. Not great. I could stay out there, but, you know, I was not that great about it. And my deal was, when my daughter Michael got old enough to go to school, if I wasn't doing really well on the tour, then I would go back into club and teaching. In those days, you didn't make a lot of money anyway. I think in our years on the tour, Casper Palmer might be leading money winner at 100 $125,000, which, you know, to us seemed like a lot of money. Now it would be nothing. And so after the 3 years, I decided I gave it a shot. I wasn't as good as I thought I was, and I'm honest enough with myself to admit that. And so I just went back to being a club pro and teaching, and I love to teach, and I just like to help people. You know, people think, and your dad is the same way, people think that all we teach is tour players. They don't realize we spend most of our time with the average player. You know, you get a recognition because of your work with tour players, but for me, in my golf schools, or your dad's golf schools, we're with the average players every day. So I get as much success or feeling of success when a guy who's never broken 90 sends me an email and said, I shot 83 today, and I'm so happy for him and stuff. Now, whether tour players win, it pays better, but you know, that's a different scenario.
Yeah,
I can attest to that, having sent you many a golf swing.
Yes, you have.
Over text message, and you helped me out with it.
Yes, you have. Well, you've got a good golf swing.
How has it changed? How has it evolved over the years from when you first started to where teaching is now, and what has been the challenge for you in that evolution, and kind of where do you feel like teachers are nowadays?
We've gone from having no assistance as far as launch monitors and cameras. When her dad, David, and I started, and her dad was the first one that made people realize you have to pay good money for good instruction. And we all thank him for that, because we wouldn't be making the money we'd make if he hadn't come along. But the change to me has been the equipment change. The equipment change and the mindset of the way people teach. I was taught by my father. The two mentors in my life are my father and the great John Jacobs. They were the two people that helped me the most, and I formed the way I do things. I don't believe in a system, because I think everybody's different. I think you can look at it this way, Henny. Two things you can do. You can either teach golf to people or people to play golf. I prefer to teach people to play golf. The golf to a student is all mechanical stuff. And I'm not the most mechanical instructor in the world. I believe, because I learned from the ball flight, tells you where the ball starts, the shape of the shot, the spin of the ball, tells you the path of the club and the club face angle and impact, because we didn't have any cameras in those days. And I think now the difference I see between those of us who are old and the younger teachers is they rely so much on technology, they've gotten away from actually watching the guy swing and watching where the ball goes. Because they've got a launch monitor there, and they've got their cell phone there, and the guy hits a shot, and he's over here, oh, you know, you're 4 degrees from the inside, 3 degrees down, this and that. So why don't you tell the guy why? Why don't you tell him why he's 4 degrees from the inside, and he's swinging the club down?
Like, how do I fix that?
They're so enamored with the numbers, and I'm not saying it's bad, because we use technology too, but I think younger teachers have lost the art of watching the person that's hitting the shot, watching his swing, watching all the mechanical things he does, and then watch the ball. Watch the shape of the ball, the trajectory of it, and the spin on it, because it pretty much tells you the path of the club and the club face angle and impact just on where the ball starts and the spin on it. And technology has advanced stuff so much, I think we've lost that part of it. And for me, I was one of the few, as you know, when I was still working the tour, I would never bring a camera to a tour event. I was the only one that didn't have a camera, because I didn't want them to see it. Because they'll over say, oh, well, gosh, this doesn't look good. Or, you know, is this? I said, no, well, that doesn't pertain to anything. Here's what we're working on. And the guys trusted my eyes so much that they said, yeah, if you tell me to do that, I'm doing it. The female golfers were the worst, because they say, oh, my outfit is awful. I don't care about your outfit. Let's look at the ball. You want to go change clothes for this one? I don't give a damn about your outfit. So I think the mental side of it, the way young instructors look at it versus guys that have been around for a long time, like her dad or me or Jim McClain in that area, Mike Adams, guys that have been very successful, my brothers, we learn differently than they've learned. And I think there's a lot of stuff out there. The internet is out there. There's all kinds of education stuff out there. But really, the bottom line is just to get the club on the right path and squared impact. That's all we're trying to do. And there's a lot of ways to get there. And the reason I say I don't like a system, because there isn't any one way to swing. I mean, go to the Hall of Fame in St. Augustine. You'll see a zillion different golf swings that worked. It's just a game of repetition, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine if someone had other than his father had seen Jim Furyk when he was a young player and changed his swing. We would have never heard of him. You didn't hear of him.
What about in terms of coaching tour pros? I feel like a lot of these guys travel with an absolute squad every single week. And as a coach, especially as a young coach, if you feel like you want to coach the best guys, they have to be out there, like literally live on the road, which I don't think you had to do so
well,
much.
It's one of the reasons I semi-retired at the end of 2019, because I'm not a hand holder.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go with you every week. I'm not going to be there every shot you hit. What did I do wrong? Well, hell, you ought to know what you're doing wrong. You're a damn golf pro. You don't know what you did wrong. Like, you're going to beat anybody. And I think the entourage around these players, I mean, you've got a swing coach, a short game coach, a putting coach, a trainer, a mental coach. I mean, oh my God. I mean, it swings over with in a second and a half. How the hell are all these guys going to help you out? And Henny, you know how I am. I'm very simple with my guys. So this is what we're doing. If it's not broken, we're not going to fix it. And the one thing I've noticed with a lot of the modern day teachers that are there every week, they always feel like they have to tell the guy something. Well, if the guy's playing good, how about you tell him nothing? How about you pop him up? Let's just use psychology. Make him feel good about himself. Make him feel positive. And it got to the point where I couldn't deal with it. I said, this isn't me, so I think I need to turn this over to these young people and let them do whatever they do. And, you know, a lot of the guys still come to me. They fly out to Vegas, and I've spent a lot of time with a lot of them, the same guys I used to teach. I got a nice part about it is I've got some new ones. You know, the work I've done with Danielle has been very enjoyable with her. I really only taught in the last 20 years, other than Sari Park when she first came over here. I really only taught two LPGA players, and they're two very similar in personality, Suzanne Pedersen and Daniel Kang. And I like them both because they're competitive, they're feisty, they get into it, they have language similar to mine at certain times, which isn't always good. And so I've really
the honey badger mold.
Yes, I've really enjoyed that part of it. And I've still stayed in touch with most of the tour players that I worked with in the past. They still come out every now and then. So I keep my hand in. I don't travel much. During this COVID, I stopped my golf schools for over a year now. We're just going to start back up in October with just our corporate schools, not with regular pundits like we used to. Mm-hmm. And teaching-wise, I just teach who I want to teach when I teach.
I want to go back to something that you said, because for me, obviously you're an incredible swing coach with incredible knowledge, but and I don't know if people know this about you, but or if I'm sure you know about yourself, maybe. But even coming away from talking to you about golf, or even just talking to you, you as the person talking to you always come away feeling more confident. Like I know I've spoken to Butch because I kind of skip out of the TV compound, or I feel great about my swing. I feel like you instill so much confidence in people you talk to, but obviously in regards to coaching and teaching your students. Is that something that's natural to you, or is that something that's learned?
The funny thing about that is I am an extremely positive, or you've known me a long time, an extremely positive person when I'm dealing with my students. For my own game, I'm the most negative FOB on the planet. I get so mad at myself. And you dumb, you know, what's wrong with you? You know, and if I could take that mode over to my own game, which now that I've gotten older and I just play for fun, I'm able to do now. But I think that's what kept me from being a good player when I was younger, because I'm such a perfectionist that everything has to be perfect. And in my own self, I couldn't accept that it wasn't. And that's so stupid, because golf's the hardest game in the world. But I also think, Henny, that you have to instill confidence in your players. Tour players, for example, I always say you got to know when to kick them in the butt. You got to know when to give them their own space. You got to know when to give them a hug. You got to know when to make them laugh. And you got to know when to back away and just let them be them. And I think the fact that I did play the tour a little bit, that I have played a major championship before, that I've been around my dad and all the great players, I think that helped me deal with those guys that way. And as you know, I'm a very positive person. I mean, I don't beat around the bush. And I'm brutally honest sometimes. And I think tour players admire that in me, because everybody's kissing their ass.
Mm.
As you know, I am not going to kiss anybody's ass. If you're paying me to make you better, I'm going to tell you like it is. You know, it's not good. I'm going to tell you it's not good, and we're going to fix it. And so, but the positive side, I think that's life. There's so many negatives. If you start getting negative vibes in your body on everyday life about things that goes on, you're not going to have a very happy life.
Mm.
And it doesn't cost you anything to be nice to people. You got to work at being an asshole, because it takes work to be a jerk.
And I don't know. It comes naturally for some people.
Yeah. And we know some of them. Yeah. Actually, we know a lot of them. So I like people. You know me very well. I don't care who you are. I don't care if you've got a lot of money, if you've got no money. And we were always taught by our parents to always treat everybody the same way, just the way you want to be treated. And always take care of the little guy, because if it wasn't for the grace of God, there goes you. So never be afraid to overtip somebody or take care of somebody or just tell somebody thank you. And the other thing about me is, you know this, Ben, anybody, I like having a good time.
I'm so distracted by everything behind you in the frames. Is there any way you can give us a little tour, a mini office tour?
A bunch of memorabilia, all the...
is that Barack Obama?
Yes, I've played with a lot of presidents. That's President Obama there, yeah. And cool. Over here in the corner, you turn that one out, you can see Natalie Gulbis when she got married. I'm the one who walked her down the beach in Newport. That's kind of like a daughter to me. This one here is really good. This is the very first Masters Champion meeting in 1952. There's my dad right there. You know, you got everybody who's great. You got Hogan, Nelson, Snead, the Merritt.
They're all there.
Bobby Jones are all in that picture there. So that's pretty cool.
That is very cool.
My place is kind of like a museum. You know, we put a lot of stuff up where on the far wall, you can't see it. It's when I went to Iraq in 2007 and all the bases I went to with the military. As you know, I'm a Vietnam veteran. So that meant a lot to me. And
I love the picture of you in uniform. Young, strapping butch.
Oh, yeah. I was young once. There's a picture over here on the wall. I'll have her take over when my hair was down to here.
Oh, we got
it. And people always go, who is that? I said, so that was me. I said, I wasn't always old, you know. I said, I was young. I had a cover from Morocco at the World Golf Dar es Salaam when I was the director of golf there.
How was living in Morocco?
It was good. You know, we moved over there in fall of 71, and I spent about 5 years there full-time and then another 5 years spending my winters there. So King Hassan II was a great guy. I was his personal pro, and whenever he went, it was interesting. Morocco's a great country. Henry's been there.
Morocco. I have, yeah. Played the Moroccan Open there for years. Absolutely love it.
Fun place.
I played really fun. Ladies European Tour Q School there, which did not go well, but really enjoyed my time. It was very cool. I was like, oh, what a great trip. It's shot a million, but whatever.
You know, Morocco is just like California. It's almost the same longitude and latitude.
Right.
If you look at Northern California, you look at San Francisco, that area, that would be Tangier, Fez. Where I live down in Rabat or Casablanca, that would be like being in San Diego. And then you go down to Marrakesh and in the desert, it's like being in Palm Springs. So it's you know, it's similar. And golf's become useful. Sure.
Hugely. I'm thinking, as you're talking about kind of the country, and I'm thinking about all the Opens I played there, and I think it was my second or third year on tour. I didn't have enough money for a flight from London to Morocco. I got in last minute. I ended up driving.
Oh, really?
From London to Morocco.
All the way to Spain. All the way down to Spain.
Took the ferry
across from Gibraltar. Yep, I've done that.
Yeah, the tournament was in Casablanca area, and it was such an experience. My goodness, when you get to the port in Morocco and driving through the hills, and you've got the armed guards outside some of the mansions, and it was a real experience, but great country. I've got so many good memories.
When I lived there, we would go the other way. We would drive up to Tangier, put our car on and go across, then put our car up on a train and take the train all the way up to Madrid, then take the car off and drive all the way back down. It was awesome.
Wow.
It was awesome.
For people that don't know, it's literally like a stone's throw from the south of Spain.
Right across the bay there, golf has taken me my whole life to a lot of cool places. I don't get to see a lot of them, but I see a hotel and a golf course.
But check out one last question for you, and I always enjoy asking people this that are, you know, have really reached the sort of the top of their field. So you played on tour, got into golf instruction, the most successful golf instructor of all time. Did you sort of, when you got into golf instruction, did you have that as a goal? Like, I'm going to teach X number one players. I'm going to teach majors. So how did you, like, what were your goals at the time when you got into instruction?
I just always wanted to get better. I always wanted to look at the teacher. Your father was one of them that was very successful. What do they do that I don't do? What can I learn from them? I've never stopped learning. Every time I give a lesson, I see something that I didn't see before. I like to listen to different instructors talk. I tell young instructors, they say, what's the best advice you can give me? So the best advice I can give you is find an instructor who's successful, but you disagree with everything he teaches and go to his seminar. And they said, well, why would I want to go to his seminar? I said, because you're going to leave there. You will have learned something you didn't know, and that's going to make you better at what you do. So never close your mind down to think you'd know everything. Always keep trying to learn. I mean, I still read a bunch of stuff. I watch a bunch of stuff. I'll go listen to different guys talk because I want to hear what they're saying. A perfect example is the deal I did for Golf Digest with Gigi. I said, look, I want to go down this George Gankus guy. I never met him before. He's having a lot of success. He's different. He's like a surfer teacher. He's got his flip-flops on and his T-shirt. And I said, this guy's a character, but he's successful. I want to go down and spend a day with him. And Golf Digest said to me, are you crazy? You want? I said, yeah. I said, matter of fact, I want to go get a lesson from him. So we literally did. We went down and we filmed it. And George was great. We've become really good friends. I admire him. He's very different than I am and what his beliefs are and what he teaches. But I wanted to hear what he had to say because he's been successful.
Did anything surprise you?
Some of the ways he delivered the message is different. He's really passionate. If you listen to him teach, he's really passionate about what he does. And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the day with him. I don't tell him that he hurt my back a little bit. I'm guessing he tried to get me in, but only because I'm not flexible enough to do it. But that's how I am. I don't think I know it all. I never had a goal to be the number one instructor in the world. I'm very honored that I've been voted that by my peers for a lot of years. That's a great honor for me that they would think that much of me, the ones that are in the same business. But I just tried to be the best I could be. Whatever that was going to be, that's what I wanted to be. And, you know, when I got a little bit successful, did I want to be more successful? Yeah, but I just wanted to do it by getting better at my task. I wanted to get better at what I do and how I do it. That's pretty much it.
Well, usually our conversations are around, you know, relationship with golf, and we have this whole script, but it's so tough with you not to get all your advice on everything. I missed you before this chat. I miss you even more now.
We used to sit around and have some, I mean, people don't realize this, but you and I used to sit around and have some serious talks about life and your life and my life and what we're doing. And that's what friends are for. I mean, if you can't talk to your friend, when she said you were going to be on this thing, she saw me perk up. I said, Henny,
I know. I know. I was like,
you know Henny? I said, do I know Henny?
No, we did. And you just give such, like I said earlier, I always leave every conversation from you feeling 10 million times better. That's no different recording a podcast here. As you said, we had so many good conversations. I almost feel emotional because I miss you, but I will make, this is my pledge to call you more often now.
You know, you can
catch up more.
You can do that anytime you want. When you start back playing, just send me your swings. You have to send it to your dad.
Yeah. Okay. So Henny, I'll have Henny mine, send it to my dad. I'll come hers or send it to you.
We'll have a great
That's part about that is when you hit a bad shot, damn it, dad, why'd you tell me?
Yeah.
Damn, Butch, why did you
tell me? No, damn honey badger. It's the honey badger.
You can end with this. I tell people come to my golf schools all the time. I said, look, here's the best thing you have going for you. I said, from now on, every bad shot you hit, you can just blame me. And just say, that damn Butch Harmon, I said, because I've taken five guys out of the world and four of them fired me, so I don't feel bad. They're not going to bother me.
Awesome. Well, Butch, thank you so much for your time. That was a really great chat. And
thank you. Love you. Miss you.
Love you too, Henny.
See you soon.
Take care. Congrats. Bye.
Well, that was awesome. Henny, that office, Butch Harmon's office, is a golf museum. I know you weren't there, but I was kind of showing you around, and I hope all of our listeners got at least a feel for it because we were trying to describe the things as we saw them. But
It's a literal golf museum, honey.
He's just got such an incredible wealth of experience. I think you know that because it's Butch, but you forget the real extent to which he has that experience and the decades that he's worked across, how much the game has changed along those decades. And it's something that you said earlier about your dad as well. It's like that these guys are constantly learning, constantly keeping up to date and coaching the best players across multiple decades, which for me is super impressive. I love that.
I've asked my dad some of those same questions and the answers were strikingly similar, which I thought was really, really cool. You know, about just teaching the best players in the world. Is this something that you always really set out to do, to teach players that win majors, et cetera? And his answer was the same as my dad, which was, no, I just love to help people. And I just wanted to get better every single day, which I thought was really, really cool. And I find that a lot of really successful people do just take it one day at a time. They're not always going after these grandiose goals and fortune and fame and whatnot. They're just like, no, I just really love what I do. And, you know, one day at a time, getting better and better. But he also talked a little bit about, you know, how important it is to say the right things at the right time to their players, knowing when to kick them in the butt, knowing when to give them a hug. And it does seem like the actual relationship and trust between a player and their coach is really paramount in that sort of dynamic.
Oh, it's huge. It's everything. And as I said at the start of this podcast, that is one of the most underrated strengths of Butch Harmon, is the confidence that he gives you. Like, he has a real regard, and take away golf knowledge. He just has an extreme talent at knowing people and understanding people and moods and emotions, which is a skill. It's a massive skill. And he uses that alongside his golf knowledge, which is dynamite. If you have one and not the other, you're not a good coach. Because let me tell you, the players come in from the golf course and they have their own certain way that maybe something's got in their head, or they want to go spend hours in the range. You've got to tell them, no, just drop it. You're still a great player. You still have these things going for you, without getting technical. Just, you've got to talk to the man or woman and speak to them about, you know, their emotions and feelings and navigate that whole aspect of it. So I think that's hugely, hugely underrated in every walk of life, but especially coaching. I mean, it's crucial. And I had the most fun working with him. I feel like working in a team or a one-to-one coaching relationship or anything alongside Butch is just the best fun, because you have a teammate there.
Yeah. Do you think you could ever be a golf coach?
Absolutely not. No. The reason being, I don't have the patience. He said that the thing that he most enjoys is helping your average golfer, right? That a lot of people don't realize that when he's home in Vegas, he sees the average golfer more so than he does a professional golfer. And I think I would struggle. Like, if I said to someone, hey, do this, and then a week later they came back and didn't do it, I'd be like,
That's fair. I feel like I'm a pretty good hype woman, and I would be, you know, I would have that area down in terms of coaching. But honestly, my brothers are golf instructors, right? And I don't know if it's like a male gene or what, but they definitely got the eye. Like, my dad can see things that I don't think most humans can see in a golf swing. And my brothers also can. But I'm like, I don't know what to tell you, sir or madam. Like, if you tell me, okay, if you're like a decent player and you're like, hey, like, is my alignment right? Like, is my club face here, there, whatever? Like, I could point something out for you if you tell me. But like, the amount of people, like, people will DM me and they'll be like, do you give lessons? And I'm like, what? I'm like,
no.
You have the wrong Ledbetter. Like, I am no, like, you do not want my help. I will make you worse. I'm not a good coach. And I feel like I'm a disgrace to the Ledbetter lineage in that way. I don't know how Claude got it.
That's hilarious. I think that's you just knowing your strengths.
Yeah. And golf coaching is definitely not one of them. And that is okay. That is okay. All right, honey. Well, always, always, always a pleasure. Very excited, you know, for upcoming episodes. I hope you guys will tune in. Make sure you rate, make sure you subscribe and share and do all those things so we can get the word out about the pod. Do all the things, please. We really appreciate it. You know, tweet at us, Instagram message us, @HallieLed, @HennyKoyak.
Yes, that's my Twitter. And my Instagram is at Henny Coy. Please tweet us or Instagram us, DM us. That's the
slide in those DMs.
That one.
Yeah. But not in a creepy way, like in a nice complimentary, not in a friendly creepy way.
Yes. And if you have any questions or any, you know, topics or things you want us to chat about.
Or people.
People. That you want us to chat to. Suggestions. Yes.
Yeah.
Not you, Mum. please do get in touch with us. And, you know, like Callie said, any feedback, let us know if you love us, hate us, or somewhere in the middle. And we will speak to you soon. We hope you enjoyed this episode and our ramblings as ever. Callie, thanks.
Thanks, Henny. Bye-bye.
Bye.